You're listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast of the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato with your host, Historical Society Executive Director Jessica Potter. And now, Surrounded by History.
Hello and welcome to Surrounded by History. I'm your host, Jessica Potter, with the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Joining me today is Radio Mankato's Jeff Lang. Each week, this program explores the history all around us, the history in plain sight. In today's segment of Surrounded by History, we will explore the history and stories behind one of our local landmarks. The history of a place connects us to specific times, people, music, and events that serve as guideposts in our collective memories. Today, we are exploring shared memories about a very special and historic place right here in Mankato, the Cato Ballroom. So, Jeff, what comes to your mind when I mention the Cato Ballroom?
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to go with, like, memories of what used to be. Like, not even my memories, but, like, all the stories I've heard, all the acts I've known who've gone through there. For us currently as a radio station, we've got a lot of events that we host there, Twins Caravan once a year and a few other things. But knowing what it used to be, what it used to mean to a lot of people in the community, because it used to be the place to go, I think comes to mind. Yeah. I'm a little nostalgic about it.
No, I agree. And I think that's the fun part about this podcast today. We're going to learn more about the Cato Ballroom, not today, only today, but also that yesteryear.
Yeah.
So let's be surrounded by the history of the Cato Ballroom. Back in the 1940s through the 1960s, ballrooms across the United States were a staple of Americana, grand buildings packed full of young people dancing to the latest music and the latest dance steps. Almost every weekend, there was some sort of dance or event at ballrooms across Minnesota, which had more active ballrooms than any other state by the 1980s.
How cool is that?
I know. Isn't that cool?
Why?
It's Minnesota. And that's according to the Minnesota Ballroom Operators Association. We got to give them credit. All right. However, the number of those historic buildings still in operation or even in existence is rapidly dwindling. Less than a dozen historic Minnesota ballrooms are still in operation, down from about 180 statewide over time. Ballrooms like the one in Mankato used to be just a short drive for residents living in rural areas, providing a chance to gather, socialize, meet friends and future spouses. Woo. Whether polka, big band music, or rock and roll, ballrooms have occupied a special place in the history of the Midwest, one that is quickly disappearing. So no story of the Minnesota ballroom scene would be complete without including, of course, the Cato Ballroom, which has held an iconic place on 200 Chestnut Street in Mankato since 1946. Herb Martinka, the original owner and operator of the Cato, was not new to ballrooms. He built the Hilltop Ballroom, which was located between Cortland and New Ulm, in the 1935 and operated until the early 1940s. Over the years, he also operated local bar restaurants, including the Town and Country and the Colony Club, with his son, Jerry.
The Town and Country was located...
The Town and Country was...
Is that the Chancasco one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I thought I knew it. I wasn't sure.
I believe so. Now, there's somebody listening, and they might call us wrong on that, so we'll stand to be corrected. In the nearly 40 years operated by the Martinkas, the ballroom exploded in popularity, often with events every day of the weekend, every week of the year. He kept the space packed with regularly scheduled dances and events that drew in 1,000 or more patrons per night. Even a fire that burned the building to the ground in June 1952 couldn't stop the Cato's momentum. When it reopened in February of 1954, it was as in demand as ever. The Cato Ballroom often hosted big bands or orchestras from the area, usually on Friday nights. Saturday was generally reserved for polka night.
Oh, fun!
While there were usually events three times a week, there were some weeks that the Cato would host a dance or concert almost every night, drawing in 800 people a night on average. The largest crowd in Cato's history was the Everly Brothers on November 22nd, 1964. That night, roughly 2,400 eager fans crammed into into the Cato, which exceeded the building's 2,200-person fire code. But violating the fire code only resulted in a $75 fine. So Martinko lent them all in, and he paid the fine.
I like that. That's smart. That's smart business.
No kidding. The main ballroom, which was built again in 1946 and rebuilt in 1954, still boasts the second largest dance floor in Minnesota, 7,500 square feet. It features three bars, a coat check, I love that. Mm-hmm. And a stage with a maximum capacity of nearly 1,700. Aside from musical entertainment, there were also countless wedding receptions held in this building, but they had a twist from today's reception. During Martinka's era, the wedding group wouldn't have the entire ballroom to themselves. Okay, so just imagine this. Instead, wedding parties would purchase 100 or so tickets for the people attending the reception, and then their whole group would sit on one side of the ballroom. So, at the same time, the general public could buy a ticket to listen to live music or have dinner, and they would sit on the other side of the ballroom. Sometimes there was more than one reception at the same time in different parts of the ballroom.
That would be kind of crazy and fun at the same time. As a single guy, not only do I have a chance to meet up with all these bridesmaids, I can go meet those bridesmaids too.
I love it. I mean, I just love that part. I think that's so much fun.
It is interesting.
Over the decades, the Cato hosted thousands of concerts and attracted such big name performers, including Buddy Holly, Glenn Miller, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, Lawrence Welk, Louis Armstrong, the Beach Boys, the Everly Brothers. Back in the 1950s and 60s, musicians tended to work a performance tour circuit from one city to the next, and Mankato was a stop along that route.
Okay, that actually helps me figure something out, because I always kind of wondered, why is it that so many of these big acts, talk about the nostalgia factor, came through Mankato? I always wondered that, like, why are they not in the cities? Or, you know, because now they stop in the cities, they don't come down here.
Right, right.
I would assume that would have maybe been kind of the same then, but obviously not.
Nope,
obviously. I suppose travel is more difficult then. That's probably part of it. So, But it's so interesting to see that we were on one of those stop lines, because it's so many big names. So you look at the wall there at the ballroom with photos of, like, people who stopped through here. It's so cool.
It is. It is. And so that's what we have to talk about, because there is a big stop that happens right here in the Cato Ballroom in Mankato on January 25th, 1959. The Winter Dance Party Tour made a stop in Mankato at the Cato Ballroom. The 25-stop tour was held at ballrooms and armories across the Midwest, so Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa, in January and February of 1959. Okay, first of all, who picked winter? But I suppose that's why it's called the Winter Dance Party. The tour featured Buddy Holly and the Crickets, so the song "That'll Be the Day" and Peggy Sue.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to sing, because that would be bad.
That'll be the day.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now, can you do the next one? Richie Valens?
La, 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 la.
La, la, bamba.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's just a lot of repeating the first song.
JP the Big Bopper Richardson with Chantilly Lace, and Dion and the Belmonts, The Still of the Night and Run Around Sue.
So cool.
All hits from 1959 and early 60s. This tour became a historic tour for so many reasons, and the Cato will forever be part of that story, thanks to many great accounts of this tour and the life of the 22-year-old Buddy Holly. Did you realize he was only that old?
Yeah, sadly, he passed at such a young age.
Yeah, we are able to go back to Sunday, January 25th, 1959, as if it was yesterday. So after an all-night ride from Kenosha, the Winter Dance Party arrived about midday in downtown Mankato, the scene of their next performance. They checked into the Burton Hotel and rested before their evening show at the Cato Ballroom. The Cato was planning an overflow crowd of 1,500 teenagers who paid $1.50 each to come dance to the music of Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper. Popular Minneapolis DJ Bill Dial not only promoted the show, but drove 70 miles to be the MC that night. Mankato teens were excited to see their favorite radio songs performed in person. They pressed near the stage as Holly and his band, the Crickets, came on, and some even sat on the front of the stage where a large section of the wrought iron railing was missing. Between sets, all the performers posed for pictures and signed autographs. In attendance at this show was an enthralled Tom Klughertz, a 13-year-old aspiring guitarist who would soon be playing bass in the local band called The Gestures, who go on to their own number one hit, Run, 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 in 1964.
Very cool.
The next morning, the tour bus loaded up for their next venue in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, that evening, only to turn around and go back to Minnesota the next day. On January 28th, Holly and the Winter Dance Party drew an overcapacity crowd of 2,000 to the prom ballroom in St. Paul. From St. Paul, the Winter Dance Party bus took an oddly circuitous route, Iowa, for performances in Davenport and Fort Dodge. Then 360 miles back north to Duluth, where they played the Duluth Armory on the last night of January, where the temperatures plunged to 30 degrees below zero. In the crowd was a 17-year-old Bob Zimmerman, also known as
Bob Dylan.
There you go.
How cool is that? How many, I mean, this happens to a lot of young artists, I'm sure. They go see their favorites, but just looking back on it now is so cool to know that Bob Dylan was in the audience in Duluth. How he might have been inspired by this more than he already was, and that we had Tom Klughertz here in Mankato. That's so fun to think about that stuff.
The performers left Duluth at midnight and embarked on another 300-mile overnight drive to Appleton, Wisconsin, for an afternoon matinee. When the bus broke down 100 miles into the trip, the musicians burned newspapers in the back of the bus to keep warm while waiting for help in temperatures of 25 below zero.
Oh, my goodness.
Eventually, the Appleton show had to be canceled, but they all made it to Green Bay for a show that night. A new bus took them from Green Bay for a show on February 2nd, or for a show on February 2nd at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa.
I want to know who their tour manager was who created this. Like, well, here's what we're going to do. See?
If you see the map for it, it crisscrosses. It's insane.
It's so annoying.
Yes. So after the show in Clear Lake, listen to this. This is how it zigzags. So now they're going from Green Bay to Clear Lake, Iowa. After the show in Clear Lake, Holly was fed up with the bus and the extreme cold, so he chartered a small plane for himself and his band for the next leg of the tour, the 360-mile trip to Moorhead, Minnesota. The Crickets band member Waylon Jennings, did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Gave up his seat to the Big Bopper, who had the flu. And Tommy Alsup gave up his seat to Valens on a coin toss. The plane took off at 12:55 a.m. on February 3rd with 21-year-old pilot Roger Peterson and the three musicians. Within 5 minutes, it had crashed into a cornfield. All aboard died instantly. The rest of the musicians on the bus didn't hear about the tragedy until they arrived in Moorhead. The show in Moorhead went on as a tribute show to an overflow crowd of 2,000. The song, The Day the Music Died, pays homage to these three rock and roll legends.
With that, we'll take a break. We'll come right back with Surrounded by History.
Welcome back to Surrounded by History. We're talking about the history of the Cato Ballroom. So let's move back to present time, present-ish time. Herb and
Back to the future. Kind of.
Well, it's about the same time period. Herb and Jerry Martinka continued to own and operated the Cato Ballroom until 1982 when Herb retired. The Quartz family, which had owned a bowling alley in Mankato, took over ownership. At this time, there was not a lot of competition for local entertainment venues, so the Cato continued to hold the monopoly. But everything changed when the Mankato Civic Center was constructed in 1995. In 1996, the Cato's banquet room was added with its own dance floor, bar, and an entrance off the back parking lot with maximum occupancy of 186. In 2014, Tanya Cords purchased the 26,000 square foot Cato Ballroom from her former in-laws. Cords focused on transforming the building inside and out to an upgraded Art Deco look, keeping many of the Cato Ballroom's signature touchstones, but making things more consistent, modern, and appealing to a younger crowd. Over the years, she and her employees have painted almost every interior wall, painted the entire exterior, replaced every light bulb in the ceiling, including the famous sign on the roof, replaced the hardwood dance floor, and redone the stage carpet, among many other projects. While they still serve as a dance hall for big bands and polka nights, the Cato Ballroom hosts theater performances, fashion shows, fundraising events, high school proms and formals, tribute shows, album release parties, symphony performances like Pops at the Cato, class reunions, corporate lunches, business meetings, Twins Caravan.
That's right, yep.
You know,
we used to hold the bridal show there way back in the day.
Yeah, so it's still a go-to venue. Another highlight recently was the Buddy Holly Story Dinner Theater presented by Merrily Players in 2016. Over 1,800 people visited the ballroom over 4 days for four sold-out performances, similar to attendance at the original Winter Dance Party. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So today, the Cato Ballroom hosts KEYC-TV's Bandwagon, Minnesota, possibly America's longest-running locally produced television show, which began on November 21st, 1960.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
I grew up watching that show. My mom and my grandma, before we go out to eat at my grandpa's farm, grandma would be like in front of the TV, like, oh, there's Marianne and Dave. They're dancing there. They're there tonight.
I love it.
Growing up, that was such a great show to like just watch with your grandma.
I love it. So the program hit the airwaves to help promote the launch of the new television station, KEYC. So that's why it's there. For over 40 years, KEYC TV Studios up in Upper North Mankato hosted 200 plus people every month for 3 hours taping of live music and dancing on the first Monday of the month. Most of the music was and still is polka. The first Bandwagon host was Earl Lamont, who taught television production at MSU, followed by the longest running host, Chuck Pasek, from 1961 to 1995.
Wow.
Who was a local broadcast legend who started in radio on KYSM. That's one of our previous podcasts.
Yeah, it is.
The program would then air on Sunday nights at 6 p.m. In 2000, the 40th anniversary of Bandwagon took place at the Cato Ballroom to accommodate for the 1,000 people in attendance. Shortly after that, the taping of the show was moved to the Cato, where it continues today on the first Monday of every month. Doors open at 5:30 for a night of old-time music and dancing from 6:30 to 9:30. There's a small cover charge, which will get you in. Drinks, sandwiches, and snacks are available for purchase.
There you go. That's really cool. There's so many, like I said earlier before we started, the nostalgia behind all these things. Like, it produces more things. Like, obviously, the Buddy Holly stories affects a lot of people. People, that song, The Day the Music Died, is impactful. The Bandwagon has got so many memories for people because it's just a consistent staple in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cato Ballroom has been there for how many years? And hopefully that continues.
Hopefully.
I would love to see that continue to just be something that people can go to. The problem there that they suffer from, and I'm guessing a lot of ballrooms do, is they were built a long time ago. So they got a lot of old stuff. The cost goes up.
Old stuff is good stuff.
Not old stuff. Old stuff as in like pipes and wiring and stuff, and it costs money to replace those things, you know, and then you have to worry about that, and then it goes into your costs, and so these other venues that are popping up are a little bit newer and fresher, and they have that. But you know, the one thing I noticed about all these other venues, and this is total love to the ballroom scene, it is the fact that these ballrooms have style. They have a its own atmosphere built into it, personalities. You don't get a personality when you go to a newly built venue. There's nothing there.
They have history.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I mean, have you heard of the Golden Bubble?
No.
It's down just across I-90. But like, it's kind of the same thing where it's like all the memories that are probably in that Golden Bubble that everybody go out and dance Friday night after working in the farm all day, now it just sits there. You know, and how sad is that?
Exactly. So we're really lucky. We're really lucky in this community to have this unique venue. The Cato Ballroom has served Mankato, their entertainment, celebration needs for over 75 years. I would say we have to remember to keep supporting the Cato. They have nothing to do with this podcast. I just want to put that out there. Mm-hmm. So ask anyone. I'm sure they have a special memory or story about the Cato. We sure hope you enjoy today's program as we explore the history of the Cato Ballroom, a local landmark. All of the information we share today comes from the archives of the Blue Earth County Historical Society, and I had an outside source, the book Everybody's Heard About the Bird, The True Story of the 1960s Rock and Roll in Minnesota. It's a book by Rick Sheffcliff? So sorry, I'm sorry, saying your name wrong. Check it out, but it talks about all of the history of this whole scene in Minnesota. Minnesota plays a huge part in the 1960s music scene. So check that book out. Stop by the History Center and check out what we've got going on. And as always, thank you for joining us. Until next time, we hope you see the history that surrounds you.
You've been listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast from the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato. For more information on this and other topics, visit BlueEarthCountyHistory.com or stop by the Blue Earth County History Center at 424 Warren Street in Mankato. Thanks for listening to Surrounded by History.